Welcome to the first episode of this course on cloud and AI solution architecture. Over 16 episodes, we are going to walk the whole road from ordinary software engineering to the industrialization and governance of artificial intelligence in the cloud. And we are going to start in what might feel like a strange place. We are not going to start with tools. We are not going to start with platforms or pipelines or any of the vocabulary you have probably already heard. We are going to start with failure. Specifically, with a precise, documented, repeatable list of the ways in which machine learning systems break. There is a reason for that. If you learn the practices first, they look like bureaucracy. Somebody tells you to version your datasets, and you think, that sounds like a lot of ceremony for a folder of CSV files. Somebody tells you to build a feature store, and you think, that sounds like an expensive way to compute an average. But if you learn the failures first, every one of those practices stops being ceremony and becomes an obvious countermeasure to a problem you can now name. So today is about the diagnosis. The rest of the course is the treatment. Let us begin with the single idea that everything else hangs from. A classical software application changes along one axis, and that axis is code. Everything we have built in software engineering over the last 40 years assumes that. Version control assumes it. Code review assumes it. Continuous integration assumes it. Rollback assumes it. The assumption is simple, and it is powerful. If the code is identical, the behavior is identical. A machine learning application changes along three axes: code, data, and model. Remember that as DMC, data, model, code, because almost every table you will meet in this course, whether it is about principles or testing, or monitoring, or maturity, is organized into those same three columns. If you can rebuild the three columns from memory, you can rebuild most of the discipline. Now, why does the third axis matter so much? Two properties, and both of them are genuinely new. The first property is that the model artifact is derived, not written. Nobody sits down and authors a set of weights. Nobody can review them line by line in a pull request. A human being cannot look at a model file and tell you whether it is correct. The quality of a model is only observable statistically on data. That means your entire quality assurance apparatus, which was built around a human reading a diff, has nothing to grip. The second property is bigger, and I want you to hold on to this one sentence above all others in this episode. The world is an input at runtime. The behavior of your system can change, even when nothing that you own has changed. No commit was merged. No model was redeployed. No configuration was edited. And yet, on Tuesday, the system behaves differently than it did on Monday, because the distribution of the data arriving at the front door has shifted. Customers changed their habits. A partner changed a format. A competitor launched a promotion. The world moved, and your system moved with it, silently. Put those two properties together and you get the consequence that shapes everything. A build can be triggered by a code change, or by a data change, or by a model change. And each of those three needs its own versioning, its own tests, and its own promotion rules. Honestly, most of this course is just the careful elaboration of that one sentence. So that is the shape of the problem. Now let us look at the canonical diagnosis, because somebody already wrote it down, and they wrote it down more than 10 years ago. The founding text is a paper called Hidden Technical Debt in Machine Learning Systems by Scully and colleagues at Google, published at the NIPS conference in 2015. Its thesis in one line is this: machine learning gives you a fast win, and the win is not free. It is a loan. You will be paying interest on it for years. The paper's central empirical observation is worth quoting. Only a tiny fraction of the code in many machine learning systems is actually doing machine learning. Everything else, and by everything else we are talking about roughly 95% of the code base, is supporting code. And all of that supporting code is the surface on which the debt accumulates. The paper organizes the debt into families, and I want to walk you through them, because these names are the vocabulary of every serious architecture review of an AI system. The first family is boundary erosion. This is where classical modular design starts to fail you. The headline item here is entanglement, and entanglement has a famous nickname, the CACE principle. CACE. It stands for changing anything, changes everything. The idea is that no input to a model is truly independent of the others. If you change one feature, or one hyperparameter, or the data distribution behind any input, the learned meaning of all the other features shifts. There is no stable interface between feature 7 and the rest of the model. And that is precisely why machine learning components resist the modular decomposition that we normally rely on to keep large systems manageable. Also in the boundary erosion family are correction cascades. This is what happens when you build model M prime as a patch on top of model M, and then model M double prime as a patch on top of that. It feels efficient at the time. The consequence is that improving the base model can now degrade the whole system, and the entire chain has to be maintained as a single unit forever. And then there are undeclared consumers, sometimes called visibility debt. Your predictions are being read by a downstream system that nobody told you about. Somebody found the table, and it was useful, and they wired it in. So now a perfectly reasonable model change breaks a consumer you did not know existed, and you find out about it from a customer complaint. The second family is data dependencies, and the paper makes a sharp point here. Data dependencies cost more than code dependencies. Why? Because for code, we have compilers, we have static analysis, we can ask a tool what depends on what. For data, we have no compiler. Nothing tells you that this model is quietly consuming a table that another team is about to change. Within that family, watch for unstable data dependencies, which are input signals that are themselves the output of another model, or tables that quietly change underneath you. And watch for underutilized data dependencies, which are legacy features, bundled features, features with tiny coefficients, features that are heavily correlated with another feature. They add fragility for almost no accuracy. The way you find them is leave one feature out of evaluation, and when you find them, the correct action is to delete them. The third family is feedback loops. A direct feedback loop is when the model influences its own future training data. Think of a ranking model. It decides what gets shown. What gets shown determines what gets clicked. And clicks are the labels, so the model is grading its own homework forever. A hidden feedback loop is more subtle. Two systems influence each other through the world, with no code path between them at all. Two independent recommender systems on the same website will do this to each other. The fourth family is system-level anti-patterns, and these are the ones that show up in code review. Glue code, which is the vast supporting layer written to get data in and out of a general-purpose machine learning package, and which freezes your system to that package's idiosyncrasies. Pipeline jungles, which is data preparation that has grown organically over years, scrapes and joins and sampling steps, and which can only be tested end-to-end. Dead experimental code paths, the conditional branches left behind by experiments that nobody dared delete. The paper cites the price of that one, and it is a number worth remembering. Knight Capital lost $465 million in 45 minutes because of dead flags. Then abstraction debt, which is simply the observation that we still have no agreed abstraction for what a machine learning system is, nothing comparable to the relational model for data. And finally, configuration debt, which is my personal favorite because it is so consistently underestimated. The configuration of a machine learning system, which features are used, which date range, which pre-processing, which learning settings, is large. It changes more often than the code does, and it is almost always treated as an afterthought. The paper gives a checklist for good configuration, and it is worth memorizing because you can use it directly in a review. A good configuration system is easy to diff against the previous configuration. It is hard to make manual errors in. It is visually inspectable. It is automatically assertable. And it is versioned and reviewed like code. Then there is the family I would call the world moves. Fixed thresholds in dynamic systems, where a decision threshold chosen once becomes quietly invalid after the next retraining. And monitoring, which the paper treats as the central operational recommendation. It names three things to watch. First, prediction bias, meaning the distribution of predicted labels should track the distribution of observed labels, and you should slice that comparison to localize where the drift lives. Second, action limits, meaning you cap the real-world actions a system is allowed to take, and you alert when the cap is hit, rather than blindly acting on an anomaly. Third, upstream producers, meaning you monitor the systems that feed you, and you propagate their service level agreements into your own. One last idea from the paper, and it is the one I would use to open an architecture review. How do you measure technical debt? Not by velocity. You measure it by the ability to change. The paper's diagnostic questions are excellent. How easily can an entirely new algorithmic approach be tested at full scale? What is the transitive closure of all data dependencies? How precisely can the impact of a new change be measured? Does improving one model or signal degrade others? And how quickly can a new team member be brought up to speed? Now, that paper was a diagnosis from one company. 4 years later, in 2019, a team at Microsoft published a case study at the ICSE conference, the International Conference on Software Engineering, titled Software Engineering for Machine Learning. It won Best Paper, and it confirmed the diagnosis empirically by studying how Microsoft teams actually build AI features. It found teams grafting machine learning onto their existing agile workflows, and it isolated three differences from traditional software engineering. The first, discovering, managing, and versioning data is much more complex than any dependency management in classical software. The second, model customization and model reuse require different skills from those typically present in a software team. And the third, which is the important one, AI components are harder to isolate as modules because of model entanglement and because of non-monotonic error behavior. Let me slow down on non-monotonic error behavior, because it is the one that catches experienced engineers. In classical engineering, local improvement is monotonic. If you make the sort faster, the program gets faster. That is so deeply built into our intuition that we do not even notice we are relying on it. In machine learning, local improvement is not monotonic. A genuinely better submodel can make the overall product worse, which means that every promotion decision has to be evaluated at system level, never at component level. That single fact justifies most of the gated promotion machinery we will meet in episode 4. The same paper gives us a 9-stage workflow, and it is worth committing to memory because nearly every maturity model you will meet later is built on it. The 9 stages are model requirements, data collection, data cleaning, data labeling, feature engineering, model training, model evaluation, model deployment, and model monitoring. 2 things to retain about it. It is highly iterative, with feedback loops between most stages. There is a large loop from monitoring all the way back to data collection, and a small tight loop between training and evaluation. And this decomposition is the reference that later maturity models automate stage by stage. Now, before we finish, let me be fair to classical software engineering, because nothing I have said today invalidates ordinary discipline. The 12-factor app methodology is still the baseline for the serving side of any AI system. One code base, many deploys. Explicitly declared dependencies. Configuration in the environment. Backing services as attached resources. Strict separation of build, release, and run. Stateless processes. Port binding. Scale out through the process model. Disposability. Development and production parity. Logs as event streams. Admin tasks as one-off processes. An AI platform that violates development and production parity, or that hardcodes its configuration, will fail for entirely classical reasons long before it ever fails for interesting machine learning reasons. But notice what the 12 factors have no factor for: data, models, and, from episode 10 onward, prompts. The methodology assumes that the behavior of a deploy is fully determined by code plus configuration. And that assumption is exactly the one that machine learning breaks. So here is the spine of the whole course, in 3 steps. Code, then plus data and model, then plus prompt and context. Classical software engineering, then ML ops, then general AI ops. Each layer keeps everything the previous layer gave you and adds a new axis of change that needs its own versioning, its own tests, and its own promotion rules. Before I let you go, let me leave you with something to chew on while you finish your walk. Picture a retailer running a demand forecasting service. Here are five facts from an architecture review. The training set is built by a notebook that reads a sales table maintained by the business intelligence team, and nobody in the machine learning team knows its refresh schedule. A second model takes the forecast as one of its inputs. The ordering system multiplies the forecast by a safety factor of 1.15, hard-coded in 2023. A finance dashboard reads the forecast table directly, and the machine learning team only found out last month because of a complaint. And retraining is a manual Friday job whose last four runs used slightly different feature code kept in four separate notebook copies. Every single one of those five facts is a named item from the taxonomy we just walked through. See if you can name them and see if you can attach one countermeasure to each. In the written article for this episode, you will find the full answer, along with a sixth item hiding in the scenario that most people miss. In the next episode, we take those three axes and turn them into three physical pipelines, with real stages, real tooling, and the one architectural decision that most teams make by accident, which is how the model actually gets served. See you there.